Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Florida State Basketball. This is your host, Nick Andre. Once again, appreciate you guys for tuning in. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Austin. What's going on with you, man? Happy to have you back on.
What's up, man? Another week. Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we are joined by a special guest. You guys may know him if you follow Florida State Athletics. I'll go briefly over the resume. Play-by-play announcer for ESPN, ACC Network, a sideline reporter, and a multi-time AP award-winning broadcaster. I have Mr. Orion Masudi. Happy to have you on, man. How are you doing?
Nick, I appreciate you, brother. I feel like you should introduce me in the starting five as I come out, and that's pretty good, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I had to think of something, man. You know, especially with you, with it being your first time on the show, man. So I had to figure out something, man. So for those who don't know you, introduce yourself. Let people know who you are. You know, your journey as far as broadcasting.
Well, thanks for having me. I'll start like I always do. My name is Arya Masudi, and broadcasting has been my passion since I was a kid. And so didn't quite know that I wanted to go into it 100% till I got into college. But things started to go well, and one thing leads to another. And Florida State was such a launching pad for me when I was in school to help with opportunities and covering, obviously, as you guys know, some of the best athletic programs in college sports. And it's top to bottom, men's sports, women's sports, the depth of the successes of these athletes and these programs, I don't think is matched really anywhere else, top to bottom, than Florida State University. So it's been good getting the call with women's basketball. 7 years has been a pleasure of mine. And it was something straight out of school that kind of fell into my lap. The right guy left at the right time, and I was next on deck and in the right place at the right time, as they always say. Sometimes opportunity knocks, and it's just you got to be ready. And so I've been doing that for 7 years. Did some seminal productions, and I still have a good relationship with them, doing ACC Network Extra. Have done pro soccer, you name it. It's a vast array of things that I've been blessed to do. And getting to join the Florida State football broadcast this year with Learfield was a dream come true for me as a kid who grew up in Tallahassee and loved Florida State so much. So that's been good. ACC Network called a couple years ago and started out with a handful of games, and that keeps growing. So fingers crossed that it continues, and you know, the ascent continues, the growth continues. I'm thankful for whatever I get, and have dreams one day of hopefully being on some bigger and better games, and as does everybody, try and continue to move upwards. But I'm sure I missed plenty of things that I have done. But I know we have limited time, and we want to talk about some hoops and some different sports. So I'm ready to hop in. But Nick, thanks for having me, man. VZ and I have been buddies for a few years now, and yep. He knows that we have after every game we have a phone call for Florida State men's hoops.
Sometimes it lasts 5 to 10 minutes. Sometimes it lasts an hour and a half because we're just ranting after a certain games. It just happens that way. It just happens.
And Nick, we went 17-16 this year, man. So it was like every other one was happy and sad. It was like just like the basketball team. We never trust got me, to bring watched, any together.
Yeah, trust me, I watched every game, so I'm with you on it, man.
No doubt. Well, I appreciate you guys having me.
No, so
speaking,
sure.
Speaking of some of those sports, you mentioned football, women's basketball. You've done men's basketball, ACC Network. But you also do baseball, softball, soccer. You go all over Florida State's campus. What is it like bouncing between sport to sport, season to season?
Yeah, I knew I had missed something, and you know my resume better than I do. So I appreciate that. It's a whirlwind. You know, you got to be ready. You don't have a ton of time when you're doing this many sports to really dive into any one for long periods. I hope that's something that one day I can do, whether that be a team announcer for an NBA team or an MLB team. And that way I'm kind of locked in that world. But it's been fun. Like I mentioned, they win a lot, right? So at Florida State, these teams are winning a lot. And so that makes the job better. It makes the job easier. You're having more fun, obviously, when these teams are winning, but it's been great. You know, I can't complain about a single thing. And you know, soccer was my first baby with Florida State, and that's the best soccer program in the country now for over a decade. So so on and so forth. It's been a great, great run.
Yeah, so you juggle between the play-by-play announcing and you do the sideline reporting as well. So is there a difference as far as doing it, as far as preparation, as far as, you know, other things?
Definitely. I think they all have different roles, and that's something that I have always taken pride in, you know, is versatility, being able to be kind of a Swiss Army knife and They all are beautiful though in their own way. Like sideline reporting is amazing because you're on the field and you're the eyes and the ears that nobody else can have. And so I always try to embrace that. What stories can I tell? Can I get in the huddle? Can I talk to players, you know, before a game? What can I do to add to this broadcast? What can I do to humanize some of these athletes that, that we think of as gladiators, right? In the arena, and how do I connect them to the fans? Because ultimately that's what broadcasters are. They are the medium between the players and the fans. And so sideline was a lot of fun. And then play-by-play, I mean, man, that's a lot of prep. You got to be ready for so many different people. You're on the whole time. There is no break. And you got to make sure that you're doing every player justice, every storyline justice, making sure your color announcer who's sitting next to you, your analyst, you're setting him up to, or her up to succeed. And so I think I love them all differently. And then I've done hosting as well, you know, desk hosting, halftime hosting, pregame show hosting, postgame show. And those are fun in its own right. You can kind of have more personality on those and kind of be yourself. And just kind of, whether it's getting ready for a big game, breaking down what just happened in a postgame, you have the opportunities to continue to tell stories and catch viewers and listeners up on what's been going on. So.
You've also been able to, this season especially, go back and forth between radio with Jeff Colhane, which we talked to him a couple weeks ago, then back to ACC Network, calling games, especially early on in the non-conference slate. What is it like in those differences where you're calling home games for ACC Network and then you're on the road with Colhane for Syracuse and Georgia Tech, whatever other games you did?
Yeah, Vizi, that's a good question, because it's something that, you know, I think when you have the differences in the two, you have to make sure that you're doing your due diligence, so to speak, on both, right? With a team, you can be a little bit more biased. It can be centered around that group, that program's fan base, because truthfully, the other team's fan base isn't listening. Now, when you do ACC Network or ESPN, on a national scale, you have to be unbiased and right down the middle and neutral. And I've had to really like give myself some talks before I go on air is, hey, make sure that both fan bases are being able to be connected to the athletes that they love. Make sure that you're telling the right stories on both sides, that you're not leaning any one way, that you're happy for both sides when they win. And I think as I've gotten to do more of those games, I have genuinely learned to love both sides, right? And you know, you can say rivals or whatnot. I've called games for rivals, and those are people too to me. Like those athletes have families and stories, and they come from somewhere and they have a struggle to get to where they are. And I genuinely, once the people aspect comes into it, you really are happy for those guys and or for those ladies. And it does make the broadcast easier to be neutral, so to speak. But I'll be dead honest with you. I love doing non-Florida State, because I promise you, all I'm thinking about is, what are we having to eat after this game? Or where are we going? What bar are we going to? Because it's easier, less turmoil on the heart, so to speak.
No, I get the 100%. So I have a two-part question per se. So with you doing sideline reporting, do you happen to have a favorite interview with either a player or a coach? And the second question is, with you continuously interviewing Leonard Hamilton, how would you describe him as a person and as a coach?
To answer the first part of your question.
I know they're pretty long, so you take your time.
No, that's okay. I'm thinking, as soon as you asked that first question, I started to think. Go down memory lane. I'll be honest, guys. The chance to interview Deion Sanders was really cool. To get to do Prime was really cool. Because a lot of the best ones that I've had have been at Florida State, right? So there would be, you know, the Derwin Jameses of the world, the Jalen Ramseys, Devontae Freeman, Telvin Smith, you know, maybe a coach like Mike Norvell or something like that, right? But to get Prime doing sideline – for a spring game, and he wasn't even there for Florida State. I think he was there for his kid who was being recruited at the time. I think it was Shador who was in the recruiting process, and at the time we had Willie Taggart as head coach, and you know, those two are tight, Willie and Prime. So I think Shador was on the list, but I would say, without having the time to think about it all the way through and make a list of all the different people that I have a right to change my mind, Nick. Okay, so if you ask me,
now go ahead.
You know, if you ask me on a different date and I thought about it, I have a right to change my mind. But I would say, as of this point, getting the chance to talk to Prime was cool. And then remind me of your second question.
My second question was, with you interviewing Leonard Hamilton throughout all the years, describe him as a person and a coach.
Yeah, oh man, how much time do you got? Coach Ham
all night
is,
if you want.
Yeah, there are fewer genuine human beings that walk this earth than Leonard Hamilton. And I think everyone sees the demeanor on the court, and I think there's this iciness to him, and I think he has to be that way at times to be able to handle the job that he has, so to speak. But he really is funny, and he really is genuinely caring about people, and he's always been about people first, always putting others before himself. Him and I have got a relationship that goes back to when I was really a freshman in college, and my dad worked at Florida State as the director of the Champions Club for almost 15 years, and so Coach Ham would take recruits there, and so there was a relationship kind of always there with Coach Ham and myself, and so when he knew I wanted to get into media, and I was trying to become a broadcaster, you know, that relationship kind of evolved. And this year being able to do a handful of games on the men's radio side of things, which was a first for me, was really cool to just kind of see him in his element on the road, seeing him crack jokes, charm everybody in a room. And I really do love that guy genuinely. I mean, he will be there for me anytime I need, if there's a phone call about anything. And he's always got a slick joke, so to speak, waiting on you. But few people, again, Nick, with a bigger heart, and I know you know that VZ has seen that up close and personal throughout his life.
You've also able to be up close with Coach Sue and Coach Brooke, which I feel kind of have that same kind of vein where there's genuine people. What has that experience been like as well?
Yeah, I'm indebted to those two for the rest of my life. Coach Sue took a chance on a 23-year-old, right, out of college, and at 23 I was more immature than high school kids and needed a lot of fine-tuning, so to speak, and polishing up. So she took me in like one of her own, and she didn't have to. They treated me like family. I watched Brooke basically grow alongside of myself, you know, in our roles, and we joked a couple of weeks ago. We were like, wow, we've watched each other go from babies to where we are now, and she was just an assistant coach. And I watched her go from assistant to associate head coach to having the job, you know, and seeing what she's had to fight through this year and the grace in which she's done it to be able to get them back to another NCAA tournament has been amazing. But professionally, they were the first to give me a chance. And Florida State women's basketball for me was family, and they treated me like family for 7 years. So, yeah, VZ, those two mean a lot to me, and they're close to my heart.
Yeah, that's what's up. I mean, I'm definitely glad that you how you describe Coach Hamilton, because I think a lot of people may view him as like really stone cold, but I think that there is, you know, a really good side of him that a lot of people may not see, you know, obviously off the court. So let me ask you this, because I'm sure you've heard a lot of the rumors that's been swirling around this team throughout the season. Obviously the last few years, you know, it's been a roller coaster. You know, we talked about them finishing 17-16 this year. And there's a lot of fans and a lot of insiders that aren't really happy with Coach Ham right now. And a lot of people do believe that he should be on the way out. So how do you feel about that? Have you been able to hear about those rumors?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, if you're a basketball fan, you've heard about everything. And for me, you know, it comes down to what are the priorities for Florida State basketball, right? And I think criticism is always – what's the right word here? I think criticism is always fair. But it needs to be fair. Does that make sense? Like, if it's objective criticism and it's warranted criticism, I think that it's fair. At the same time, I personally feel like with Florida State's at right now with their athletic department and all the things that they're trying to accomplish, you got a coach who's got one more year left on his contract, right? And Coach Ham, I think he knows he's getting to the final days of his job. And I genuinely believe this from the things that I've heard, Nick, is that he will be back for another year. I think the administration is willing to give him that year to see if he can get things right. And I think he's steadfast right now, Nick, trying to improve this team. I think he realizes in the portal this year, he's going to have to get guys that can shoot the basketball, spread the floor. He wants older guys that can win from the people that I've talked to. And he wants guys that are coming from programs that are winning, right? And I think when you see all the names FSU's already mentioned with in the portal, I think it's guys that have been winning, right? It's been guys that are on programs that have had success. And I think that's the difference. They were a pretty good basketball team last year. I think inconsistency was their downfall. They had one great game, and you've seen the way that they can battle some of the top teams in the country. And they just couldn't do it day to day, and they couldn't do it game to game. And I think that's going to be the key for him. And, you know, next year, whether that's his final year or not, that's a decision above my head and above my pay grade. I think I'm as passionate as anyone of wanting Florida State basketball to be able to get back to what it was, but there is no Florida State basketball without Coach Ham. And I think that has to be mentioned as well. This isn't this run of which we're trying to compare everything to that standard was created by Ham. And I think that has to factor, and that has to mean something when you try and evaluate something like this. So it is nuanced, man. It's not an easy answer. I think we live in a day and age where people want to rip a Band-Aid off when they don't like it, and patience is definitely not a virtue anymore in today's society. But, you know, I would love to see him come back and get another year. And I think me more than anyone, and I know VZ's on this call too and on this Zoom too, would love to see that program get one more chance at an NCAA tournament. Because as you've seen this year, you never know what could happen and what kind of run could happen. I mean, Kevin Keats was a dead man walking. Like, people were talking about every year how Kevin Keats, right, at NC State, should not have that job. Look at that. He just, I mean, he saved himself for at least five more years with this type of run. And that's just the beauty of March to me. You never know.
Keats was 5 minutes away from being fired if they lose to Louisville in that opening round. Then here we are 9 games later, and they're in the Final Four on just an unbelievable run. I'm working on a video right now of how Florida State was able to limit DJ Burns in that game. And it's just so much different from what we've seen this last month, really, from NC State. So the coaching is still working for Florida State. And I feel like the fan base always points to the negative. That's always something they want to do, especially when it comes to basketball. It's been that way since really before Coach Hamilton won that first ACC championship in 2012. They always want to point out the negatives before they get to the positives. Florida State made a ton of improvements this season. And even if it wasn't where we expect the program to be, I'm right there with you. I think, I know Coach Hamilton's going to be back. I feel like if he wasn't going to be back, we would have known by now, just with the way coaching goes in this sport. What you already talked about the experience, the shooting. What does the men's basketball team need to add outside of that?
I'd like to see a dominant post player get added, right? And I think that, you know, has been a key for a lot of the teams making deep runs. Yeah, it's a guard-oriented game now, right? We all know that. At the highest level, I think guard play is what matters. But we've seen this kind of throwback to pass, right? Where a guy like a Jokic, big guys down low, like Davis and the NBA, and you're seeing some of these teams that are making runs, they've got a dominant big man. And in college basketball, let's look at the Final Four right now, right? Those teams are all playing. But yeah, Zach Edey, Klingon, DJ Burns has been playing out of this world. He's a true post, in my opinion.
And even when he subs out, Middlebrooks has been playing fantastic for them.
Yeah, I just think that needs to be one of the keys is you need to have a post player that can come in. And I like some of the pieces that Florida State has. Like a Cam Corin, I think, can develop into a really nice player. I just still don't think from a consistency standpoint they have anyone on their roster in terms of a big that can come in and just give you what you need against opposing teams, right? And the key to me is get a big that can dominate and get shooters around them. And I think that recipe has proven to be successful for a lot of programs who are making deep runs in March here.
Well, you may get your wish because Florida State just reached out to Oklahoma's John Hughley, which for the ones that remember, he was really good at Pitt there for about a season and a half, suffered some injuries and then transferred. Didn't have the best season in Oklahoma, but if he can come back to the ACC and have some success again, that'd be a lot of fun. Not the post player you're used to seeing out of Florida State, but that would be a lot of fun if that transpires.
No, 100%. How have you felt about the recent transfers? Like, you know, we have Bob Miller who just recently announced his transfer, Primo Spears, Deontay Green, and now Tom House. How have you felt about those guys looking to transfer out of Florida State?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this day and age, again, like it's become so normal, right, to see kids want to have greener pastures. And I don't know that it's always the right decision to make, but for Florida State, it was clear that there were some areas that you needed to improve upon and some different pieces that you need to get back to being more like what Ham has kind of built in Tallahassee over his years. And so I'm sad to see them go, you know, but I wish them all the best. And I genuinely hope that all those guys, they find a spot that is beneficial to their careers. I would love to see all of them make it to the end. Like Baba, I hope he makes the NBA. I would love to see that. Because why would we wish why would we wish bad things upon a kid? I mean, he's a kid, right? He's still trying to figure himself out, his life out. And maybe the best basketball is ahead of it for Baba, but you know, Primo, same way. I hope he finds what he's looking for, and some of these other guys are able to get opportunities that are best for their lives. But that opens the door for Florida State to go and get different pieces. And this era of basketball, guys, it's come down to, can you create a roster for one season? Roster management from year to year looks wildly different. And some coaches, I think, are better equipped to handle that than others. The question for Ham's going to be, he's got another shot at this. Can he be one of those coaches that knows how to put a roster together for one year? From talking to people, it seems like he understands now what he needs and the way that a transfer portal type of team needs to look to be successful.
And it took him a couple of years. I mean, you go back to that 2022 recruiting class where you brought in Baba Miller, Corin, Chandler Jackson, Deontay Green, Tom House, Jeremiah Bembry. Only two of those guys are left as of right now, and Jackson and Corin. The rest of those guys have hit the portal, already transferred in the case of Bembry last year. It's definitely taken Ham a little bit to adapt, and you know, sometimes that's the case with these older coaches, but I'm at least willing to accept that he's accepting it, because it wasn't like that way 2 years ago. I'm glad he's finally seeing the error of his ways from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, to me it's you know, he's a coach who's done it one way his whole career, right? Like, he's taken programs that need rebuilding, and he's gotten the time needed to be able to build it from scratch. And he's done it better than anybody maybe in college basketball history at taking programs from the cellar and raising them up. And he's done that at every stop that he's been at. We can go through his resume. This day and age is a little bit different, and the way that the game has gone is different, whether we like it or not. That's a conversation for a different day. It is what it is. Find a way to adapt, right? They say adapt or die, so to speak. And I think that's where Florida State basketball is at right now. But I think I share VZ's optimism. I feel pretty good about where Florida State is going to be next year and how they can compete.
Especially if Watkins comes back, which, please.
We're praying on that. But what was your biggest takeaway from the season? Because, I mean, it's clearly an improvement, you know, compared to winning 9 games the past year. You know, they had a lot of moments where they looked like they were one of the top teams in ACC. Then they had moments where they went on like a 4-game losing streak, 5-game losing streak. So what was your biggest takeaway through this 2023-24 season?
I thought early on, you know, they looked like they needed Primo, right? Like, they needed a ball handler. They needed a kid who could create his own shot. I don't think Primo ever really integrated with the team well because he had to sit out for so long. Then they had some snags in non-conference play where I just didn't think that they had the consistent energy and effort required to win some of these games, and maybe a lack of leadership at times from a player standpoint, you know, guys that are still not completely used to being alpha dogs. Jameer is your best player, but Jameer is brand new to this program. So that's different. I thought that they came together there in early January, went on that run in ACC play, right? I think it was the 6 games or so where they really started to play well. And after that, I just don't think that they consistently played good basketball. I think we all hoped that Baba would have been a little further along by this point. And it just never fully came together. They had some injuries here and there, but to me overall, it was almost like in ACC play, they would compete for 35 out of the 40 minutes, right? 35 minutes against just about everybody. You would go, that's a tournament caliber team. And then there was a 5-minute stretch where they couldn't get stops and they couldn't stay in front of anyone. And if they're not in the passing lanes, creating steals and getting into transition and turning teams over, they weren't getting stops. And I do think the lack of shooting around the perimeter, you know, you had Darren Green, but outside of Darren, you really didn't have a number of guys that could stretch defenses. I thought that started to kill them. And I think ACC coaches are so good in that they can plan around and game plan and scheme for deficiencies that teams had. And ultimately, in a day and age where you have to be able to shoot the basketball to be a good team, right? And that's at every level, pro, college, high school, doesn't matter. I just think that was Florida State's downfall. And I'm happy to see. If you're looking at most of the guys that they've reached out to in the portal, you're like, oh, 40% three-point shooter.
Yeah.
45% three-point shooter. Oh, he's a big who can stretch the floor and shoot the three. That needs to happen. And I think they know that they have got to hit the three ball, and they've got to be able to hit some shots to truly compete in the league.
Defensively, were you a fan of the 5-minute switching?
I think I like the theory. I like the system in theory, Nick. I don't know that you had the personnel to run it, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's nice when you have Terrence Mann and Trent Forrest and Devin Vassell and Scotty Barnes and all these other long-armed athletes that are quick and they make good decisions. And it's just what you tried to do this year, you know, none of your fives were able to stick with anybody like that. Baba is not able to switch on a guard. Like, that's just – it's not Baba's strength. And, you know, I think at some point Florida State decided with this roster, and me and Vizi talked about it throughout the year, you know, on some of these phone calls, their best ability to get stops were honestly to play a numbers game and hope in a game with 75 possessions that they created 20 turnovers or 18 turnovers, right? And they were able to get enough stops via turning a team over that they could just outscore teams. But yeah, it didn't work. And when teams slowed them down, right, Clemson was able to really control tempo against them twice and really have some success. And other teams did as well, I thought, you know. It's tough and it's hard to watch because Ham's teams are always so dominant defensively from one way to another. And they found some success, I thought, with hedging, you know, and trying to funnel guys. They did, but I just don't know that they found enough consistent success. And it's not easy to teach a team how to play in the middle of the season as easy as it is to do it in the off season. And so you can use it as a Band-Aid, right, for certain possessions, in my opinion. But I don't think you can completely teach a team to play a new way. And, you know, zone's easier to implement in the middle of a season. And Florida State did it at times, but that's like, you know, with Ham, zone is like if you ask Boeheim to play man, right? Like, it's like, I mean, we'll do it if we have to, but like, it's just not, it's personal for him. Like, man-to-man defense is a personal thing for Coach Ham.
Yeah, I agree with the switching 1 through 5. I loved Ham's thought process with it. You know, he goes, this is where the NBA is going. We're trying to get NBA talent in here. It's just switch 1 through 5. It's easier on the players because they're not having to remember all these callouts on hedges and ball screen defenses. And they can still switch 1 through 4 on those hedges. But just switching 1 through 5 makes it easier in theory. But when you don't have the athletes, you didn't even mention the Raekwon Grays or the Malik Osbournes that can consistently guard 1 through 5. It's just so hard to do that. And with this roster, when you're starting Darren Green Jr., who at times tried, at least early in the season, as conference play, that definitely faded. And then, as you mentioned, Baba Miller, Cam Corin at times, Deontay Green at times, and then Jalen Gainey just clearly wasn't the same athlete he was pre-injury. It's just so hard to do that, and I wish they had done a little bit better job adapting to the needs of the roster much instead of the needs of the system. Maybe we see that switch for next season. I think we might, just because they did experiment with a little bit, like in this NC State game that I was talking about earlier, they did a great job of hedging with Corin, and Corin was doing a fantastic job of getting back to Burns and making sure I don't even think Burns touched the ball more than 5 times that game. I mean, they did a tremendous job on him. And then, like you mentioned, the zone, they busted out that 1-3-1 matchup a couple times. I want to say it started at Clemson for one possession at the end of a half. I'm like, whoa, wait, what was that? That was new. And then we saw it against Pitt when they needed to come back, and it worked for a little bit. But the issue is when you play Pitt, and that shooting is just tremendous when you have Blake Hinson, Carl Carrington, all those guys. So I do commend Hamilton for trying it, but I think they do need to go back to that defense 2016 to 2019 from when I was there. You were doing sideline stuff. Work the best. I just think that fits Florida State's mentality.
100% agree. Nick, I don't know what your thoughts are on that type of defense, but to me, you know, it's you, if you can do it and you have the roster to do it, then that's awesome. But to me, it was also, man, like, I wish they would have committed to full-on havoc, you know, full-court press. Like, if they were going to play that way, I wanted
to see traps. They had the personnel to do it.
Yeah, I wanted to see traps the whole way. Ramp it up, yeah. Even another notch, and let me see you guys really commit to 40 minutes of, you know what I mean, like of what Shaka Smart used to do at VCU. And he's done it a little bit more at Marquette, but that to me was, if you were going to play that style, you can't be kind of in between. It's either you're all in on this type of defense or – you're going to go back to traditional defenses and hedging and just having those types of players that, you know, can do it. So
it's also like we talked about in the phone calls a few times, the depth just wasn't there for this team. Like the quality depth, you go back to the 2017 team where legitimately all 12 players are good ACC players. And as we talked about this year, you maybe have 7 or 8 guys that you can consistently rely on. Even then they have moments like with Bobo Miller, who struggled at times, and Jalen Worley when he was really struggling to provide offense. Once he got that offense, it was a little bit different. But I think getting some of that depth back is going to be big if they want to do create that chaos, like you're saying.
100%. What's your thoughts on Daquan Davis now joining the program going into his freshman year?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I did not think, you know, about a month ago, I was asking around, and it was not optimistic that it was Florida State. I've heard some things, you know, that I won't share it on this, on the podcast publicly, but there were some things that I heard about from the Georgia Tech side that may have helped Florida State, you know, land Daquan and finally a true point guard, right? Like, it's been a while, like maybe ever. Like, I'm trying to think of when's the last time Florida State, who prides itself on big guard you, we love that about Florida State. Yeah.
literally wearing the shirt right now.
You're literally wearing the shirt right there. That's cool and all. But like, I'm a big fan of as a fellow little guy who stands at 5'8 on a great day. If I stretch and I get out of bed and I do my workouts, I'll be 5'8. Okay. I put some good shoes on, I might push 5'9. So I'm telling you, Daquan Davis is probably like 5'10 and a half. I've seen him in person. He is not 6 foot tall. But he's lightning quick, and he gets his teammates involved, and he has an IQ for the game that I feel like we haven't seen. He can create his own shot too. You know, he's a three-level scorer. He loves defense. Like, he's a dog on defense. We'll get after it for a guy his size. And it's been a while. Like, it's going to be a change of pace. I promise you, it's the type of kid that FSU really hasn't truly had in their program. Like, maybe a David Nichols, but like, even Nichols is different, I think, than Davis. I'm excited. And anytime you can add top 100 blue chip talent to your roster, I think it's important. And so I'm really looking forward to it.
I really think, I'm surprised he didn't say this name. Hopefully he's a more realized version of CJ Walker. And I went back and watched how they were using CJ, and you see how they want to use him, but his shot just wasn't quite good enough to continuously play him. Granted, he had Trent Forrest behind him, and Trent Forrest was very clearly going to be a great college basketball player, and he was. But I think that's what Coach Ham and the staff have in their back in the mind of, hey, get a smaller, tough, physical guard in that can create his own shot, get to the basket. Because there were times where CJ did that and did that at a very high level. For those wanting a reference, go back and watch his game at Rutgers. He was amazing that game. And if you can have that extended either coming off the bench or in a secondary ball handling role in Davis, I think it's a huge addition for this team that they haven't had in almost a decade.
I think something they did with CJ a lot was in VZ, you remember, high ball screen and let the kid go to work. And I think they can do that with Davis, right? Set a high screen. You can run different actions off of it. Player can pop, he can roll. But I think you give Davis the opportunity to get his head full of steam downhill. And seems like from his highlights and from people I've talked to, he usually makes the right decision. So I'm looking forward to it. And I just think you got to put a roster. Like, you know, year one, he's not going to be. I mean, I still think Worley's your guy, probably to start at point guard. And I thought, Jalen, I thought, took big strides this year. Even though his jump shot still needs a lot of work, I thought he became a little more assertive as a player overall in year three. So I'm interested, guys. Like, what in the portal? Like, who are they going to add? Now, Ham told me, and I feel comfortable sharing this because he then said it to a bunch of boosters in Atlanta. So it wasn't completely private. They want three portal kids at the very least, and they want three high school kids if they can get it. He wants to add six total new guys. I don't know who else from high school. Yeah, I don't know who else from high school they're even looking at right now. Like, who's still realistic to add before the end of next, you know, to get him into the summer. But he said he wants 3 7-footers on the team. He wants to go back to having bigs down low.
Sounds like the Hamilton formula.
Yeah. You've got to be able to stop shots, Nick, at the rim. And that was something Florida State, I just don't think they quite had the same shot altering ability this season that they've had in years past. They could get into the lanes, right? And they could create havoc with length, and they could pressure you 90 feet from the basket. All that's 94 feet, all that stuff. They just couldn't stop shots at the rim. And I was like stunned sometimes at the 2-point percentages for some of these teams. They did better as the year went along, I thought, of 2-point percentage defense, but it's different when you can have a 7-footer truly there altering shots. And, you know, we've had our list of guys that have come through the program that have been really good at 7 feet of making sure that life is miserable at the rim. So, yeah.
You have no idea how badly I want Florida Atlantic's Golden on this roster next year. I was watching him in the tournament and in the conference tournament going, man, what do we have to do to get him in Garden Gold? And then Dusty May leaves for Michigan. Golden enters the portal, and apparently Michigan wants Yale center. They have him coming in on a visit. They haven't, I mean, maybe we'll see with Golden, but we'll see. I would love that to happen. Obviously, total pipe dream. And then as far as, you know, you just mentioned the three high school kids, really the only one that you can kind of connect some dots is Connie Ruths, who signed with Michigan in November. Florida State was in his top three with Michigan and Georgia, but then he got let out of his letter of intent once Juwan Howard got fired. Maybe they kick the tires on that again and get him back in the fold. I think that'd be a fun addition to the team. But yeah, as far as other high school kids, there's not much left out there as far as quality Florida State type basketball players.
I agree. And honestly, you know, back to the defense, as far as rim protection, you know, I have conversations with, you know, with people outside of this, and, you know, they were telling me about Florida State's lack of rim protection. I was thinking, man, like, I feel like guys like Cam Corn, guys like Baba Miller, I feel like they have that ability if they just show more effort on the end. And I get it, you know, they're not above 7 foot. You know, they're not the guys like the Christ Kamanji or, you know, whoever those guys are. But I just felt like they could have done better as far as rim protection. I did have high hopes for them, but, and I mean, they definitely did have their moments, but it just never necessarily worked out, you know, in their favor throughout the course of the season. So I definitely agree with you as far as the rim protection.
Yeah, I just think the only thing that's like DNA for those two, you know, like it's not, Baba is not really known as a defensive stopper right now at this point in his career. He's long and athletic, and I do genuinely see the things that NBA scouts see in Baba, and that seems though multiple steps away for him, you know, progressions down the road. But I think we saw it in flashes with Baba, and Corin, I think, is still more ahead offensively than he is defensively at this point in his career. So some of the guys they've had in the past, I think, have just kind of fit the mold of shot blocker a little bit better. And I'm trying to look at the VZ, you probably have it on KenPom. Who are the shot blocking leaders for Florida State this year in terms of shot block percentage? It was, to me, wasn't it the wings? It felt like it was some of the wing players.
Baba was number one. Baba was number one at 5.1%, and Jameer was number two at 3.2%.
Okay.
Actually, no, take that back. Jalen Gainey at 6.9%, but he didn't play a ton. Only played about 22% of available minutes. Then it was Bob at 5.1. Then Bull Bowen at 5, which he didn't play a ton either. But, you know, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast and you and me separately on phone calls. Huge fan of Bull Bowen and the steps he can take. Then it was Jameer at 3.2% and Cameron Fletcher at 4%, but only played, you know, 7 games.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Yeah.
Right. But let's transition to the women's team. What was your thoughts on the NCAA tournament? Because we're about 2 weeks removed from the first round loss against Alabama. And, you know, I've been able to go back, you know, watch the game. And one thing that I've said all season long is that it seems like the third quarter has always been like their biggest enemy, per se, you know, especially in that game against Alabama when they were outscored 23-11. So what were your thoughts on that first round matchup against Alabama?
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I didn't think they got enough stops defensively, you know, to truly be an elite team. They had enough guard play, maybe one of the best backcourts in the country with Amaria Gordon and Tania Latz, and certainly the most underrated backcourt in the country, in my opinion.
Thanks.
Sarah Bajetti, when she was on, and she was on against Bama, that gives you some offensive firepower, right? And you have dynamic scoring, and KK Timpson, I think, is a future WNBA player. Who doesn't get enough love, but they were hurt by injuries this season. They lost Mariana Valenzuela to an ACL in the offseason, and they were never really able to get a true big in there to supplement, you know, Michaela Timpson, and very guard oriented. They wanted to run 75 to 80 possessions a game if they could. I think they were top five in the NCAA in possessions a game, but that was out of necessity too, right? They wanted to go fast. They wanted to create more opportunities for themselves to score because they were winning in shootouts. In Alabama, I thought, I mean, if you had told me that their best player, right, was going to be a complete non-factor for Alabama and she would be in foul trouble all game, I'd have told you Florida State wins by double digits. And we had just watched FSU play really well in the ACC tournament, you know, beat a good Syracuse team pretty handily. And that was the best rebounding game of the season for Florida State. I thought that those would be keys, right? Tania Latson's healthy. Florida State, I felt pretty good about beating Alabama. And then I thought they'd give Texas a run for their money in the next round. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out that way. They didn't hit enough shots in the second half. And again, when they're not defending at a high level and they can't stop teams from scoring, they have to outscore opponents. And I think they ran out of gas there. I think Latson was phenomenal, but not enough help there from everybody else. And Nick, their downfall all year, though, was that they really only had four players scoring most of the games.
Yeah.
It was the three guards and Timpson. Everyone else was, they did something decently well. They just, you can't only have four players that are putting up numbers in the box scores. Not at this level. We're watching like some of this insane basketball right now in the women's tournament. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, you know, like some of these other guys that, oh, the women's tournament's better than the men's tournament. I'm a March Madness from the men's side.
Neutral.
Like junkie. I'm a junkie though on the men's side. However, the women's game has grown so much. It's been so much fun to watch. There's 12 million people who watched Iowa LSU, right? Like that's incredible. And so we're seeing the scoring flurry, right? Like five players that can score on some of these top teams and the ability to be able to have depth and teams that have not just star power, not just like that generational talent, but truly a team of gifted basketball players. And, you know, I think that's Florida State's next step. I hurt for Brooke because it's been a while, you know, between her and Coach Sue, they haven't won a first round game.
Yeah. In about five, 6 years, I believe.
It might've been my first year, Nick, like 2017, 2018 season. They were host. Yeah. They beat Missouri State. It could have been Missouri State or it could have been maybe Southern Illinois. And then they lost to Buffalo in round two on their home court. So since then, haven't won a first round game.
Yeah, I'll be honest to say that I initially did have them getting to the Elite Eight because I did really feel like they were evenly matched going up against Alabama. You know, they were the 9 seed. Alabama was the 8 seed. I felt like they could have had a chance to get that. Even with Texas, you know, with them not having the point guard, Roy Harmon, I felt like they could have found a way to win that one. So I actually had them getting farther than what they actually did. But, you know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, that it wasn't able to happen. But I definitely agree with you as far as the scoring. I mean, obviously it was Taniya Latson, Mikayla Timpson, Sarah Bajetti, Omaria Gordon. I felt like we had some spurts from players like Carla Villegas, Alexis Tucker, and even Amaya Bonner, but it just wasn't a consistent factor. And then as far as for the bigs, obviously Mikayla Timpson, you know, was so dominant, you know, and as far as rim protection, you know, the leader in ACC and block shots. But I feel like we didn't really get a lot from players like Avery Treadwell and then Sakai Watt as well, which obviously Sakai now is now in the transfer portal. So, you know, those are definitely some things that, you know, they're definitely going to look into this summer.
I agree with you, man. And, you know, for them, that's a group that if you tell me that you have Omaria Gordon, Taniya Latson, and KK Timpson as a core three, it's a really good place to start to build a basketball team around. And what the transfer portal does every offseason, it allows you a clean slate to try and get this thing right. You've got to go find some heavy hitters to put with them, right? Like, I think you need to go look in the ACC and find, you know, find some of these top talents in the ACC. I'm not saying go and get Georgia Amore. Obviously, I think that's going to be kind of difficult with Omaria right. Gordon and Taniya Latson. But you do need some A-listers, right? Like, you need some, you know, I think I heard Liatu King from Pitt is available in the portal right now. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, from Pitt, yeah.
She's a baller. She's a double-double machine and someone who would be dominant with KK. But my point is, I don't know who they're going to go after, but they do need two or three complete stars around them because you can have Latson as kind of the, you know, the headliner, the headlining act, so to speak, and she'll be there. And then you have Omaria Gordon and KK Timpson, who are all ACC talents, but you do need a roster. And I hope that they go and get a big. They need a big themselves. We talked about the men needing a big. I think, you know, the women need a true dominant post down low. You get Mariana Valenzuela hopefully back in the fold and back to 100%. She could be a big factor, but a good chance for them to be able to bolster their roster.
Do you believe that Taniya Latson is more so an underappreciated player in the country? Because I've been on record saying that I think that she's one of the best one of the best scorers in the country. You know, you talk about Caitlin Clark, Juju Watkins, or whoever it is. I think that Taniya Latson should be in the conversation. So how do you feel about that?
She's, to me, one of the top 10 players in the country, you know, and I think if she was on a different team, right, like say she was on LSU and she was doing what she was doing, but with LSU, I think she'd be a household name. right? Like, I think Florida State was such a fringe top 25 team and has been really for the past couple of years. You know, we've peaked it at 15 at times early in the year, but we've kind of been battling in that 15 to 25 range for a large part. That Tania has kind of flown under the radar, right? And in this conference, you know, you've had some great players like Liz Kitley, and, you know, Georgia Amor has been there. And then now you had Olivia Miles last year. This year you have Hidalgo. So, like, kind of flying under the radar are some of these bigger programs, so to speak, that have had more success as a team, which then creates the spotlight for the stars, right, on those individual teams to kind of get the glory and get the media publicity. It's unfortunate. It is. I think, you know, guys like you and I, Nick, know because we watch Florida right. State, and I think Florida State fans certainly appreciate her. But I look forward next year in her junior year to her kind of being one of those players that really emerges into the spotlight nationally, because if Florida State can be a Sweet 16 type team, people are going to know who Tania Ladson is.
100%. I mean, you talk about multiple time player of the year nominee. She reached 1,000 points scored, you know, as a sophomore. So I feel like she's only going to get better, you know, as time goes on. And, you know, obviously everybody knows her for, you know, for her relentlessness, you know, to be able to attack the basket. But I think that she's a great three level scorer. Obviously she can knock down a three. She's a great mid range scorer as we kind of saw throughout the season. So I think the ceiling is only going to continue to grow for Tania moving forward.
100%. You know who I do think next year might be the X factor for the team. And it's Omaria Gordon. You know, this was the first year she was healthy. Last year, she's been battling injuries since she set foot on campus. There's always been something, always a procedure that's kind of kept her out of it. And Omaria this year, I actually thought if Liatu King at Pitt didn't win most improved player, Omaria Gordon would have got it. You finally saw the all ACC caliber guard that she is. And she reminds me of Georgia Amor in a lot of ways, just maybe not as featured and as confident yet within her system to be able to put up dominant numbers, but that could be next year. Omaria is so special, former five-star talent, Miss Florida basketball, Florida Gatorade Player of the Year in basketball as well. And, you know, her final year next year, I think people are going to see just how good she is, because she's special, man. Like, she is so good and such a floor general.
Agree 100%. I think Omaria is one of the more underappreciated players, you know, and, you know, I feel like her defense has been really good. I feel like she makes a lot of timely shots, you know, especially when the team is in a funk. And one thing that I noticed too, because I was at the game when they played against Notre Dame at the Tucker Center, she's a really underrated rebounder. I don't know if people notice that. I mean, especially standing at 5'4", I feel like she's one person that really goes for the board. So Omaria definitely took a lot of strides this season, and I think she's only going to get better going into her senior year. But last question on the women's. Talk about the impact of Sarah Bajetti as she just finished her college career at Florida State.
I'm going to miss her. You know, she was such a breath of fresh air in a locker room and on any road trip and in practice, and really brought the edge, you know, and the energy that a locker room needed. Tenacious, tenacity. She wanted to lock down the opposing team's best player. And she would get under their skin a little bit, and there'd be a little bit of talking and some gamesmanship, and she loved taking charges and selling them like she was winning an Oscar. But she is really going to be missed, you know, and that was one of the vocal leaders of this team. And without her, you need someone to kind of step up. I think Tania is ready, you know, as she'll be an upperclassman and be one of those vocal leaders alongside KK, but there is no replacing a Sarah Bajetti, you know, and that's going to be tough. I will genuinely, like I said, I will miss her. And just the spirit that she brought into every game.
Yeah, throughout the season, I was just thinking, you know, who's going to replace her? Because I feel like you can't replace somebody of that caliber. I know that I've been harsh on Sarah Bajetti because I feel like, you know, I feel like she has a lot of moments where she doesn't take a lot of good shots. But I feel like, you know, you can't replace the energy. You know, she plays at one speed. She plays at one level, which is to attack. And that's something that really set the tone for Florida State throughout the course of the season. So, yeah, I mean, she's definitely going to be missed. And I wonder who can step into that role and possibly, you know, fill that void that they're going to miss now.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be a Tania Ladson or a KK Timpson, you know, and Avery Treadwell actually shows some good leadership qualities as a freshman. She's still developing as a player, but one of those players that comes in every day, and she's got, you know, high energy herself and such a team work ethic. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how she progresses too.
Facts. Got anything else, Austin?
So you have cold games in a lot of environments, whether sideline, radio, broadcast, whatever, is there one game or moment that specifically sticks out? That was a hard one. You can think on it for a minute.
It's the ones that you got to think about. I'm trying to think, you know, getting the call in soccer, some elite eights to the College Cup. Those have been special. Walk-offs in baseball always are special. You know, getting to host Pro Day with Roberto Aguayo and Forrest Connolly, that was special. You know, seeing some of those guys, you know, a few years back, taking the next step of their career and getting to work spring games have been special. I'm trying to think of if there's any one that stands out over the rest, and it's hard. I have it actually. I think this was really cool. So early in my career, you know, I was doing sideline. You know, now I've done more play-by-play, kind of transitioning into being more of a play-by-play guy. But at the beginning, I was only a sideline guy, almost, you know, exclusively. And 2017 was the year that Jimbo Fisher went to Texas A&M. And so it's the final home game of the year. Florida State had to reschedule a game against Louisiana Monroe.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, because they're not bowl eligible, and the bowl streak was on the line at the time. And Jimbo Fisher's gone. I'm on this broadcast. I'm supposed to meet with him on Friday in his office, and I get a call Thursday night that says, "Hey, man, we're not going to meet in his office on Friday morning." And I go, "Okay, well, I'm paying attention to the news that's everywhere. I kind of know what that means, right?"
Yeah.
And in steps, you know, Odell Higgins to be the head coach of Florida State as the interim. And Odell, first African-American head coach in Florida State history, the whole storyline changed from, can the Noles become bowl eligible? All these questions I have for Jimbo, to getting to talk to Odell. And Odell and I are now friends because of that and that experience. Seeing the grace in which he operated in that situation, to go from a locker room that was full of tears with who they felt was betraying them, right, and leaving and abandoning them, to Odell will tell you he's not much of a talker. He's not someone that wants to do media. He's not someone that really cares to be in the spotlight. Seeing him get the job done and the way the players just pounced on him and the Gatorade back and the fans chanting his name in the stands. I mean, because Odell was a Florida State fixture from the Bobby Bowden days. And that history, to me, to be able to be on that call and to have his first interview at the end of that game will be a special one for me. Asking him, what does it mean for Florida State to be able, despite everything that you've gone through, everything that's gone through this week, for you to still be able to rise to the top and find a way to become bowl eligible through the adversity. To ask him, what does it mean to be the first African-American head coach to ever coach at Florida State, to have this success, to hear these fans chanting your name? And we would joke, you know, one in Odell, right? And then he was two in Odell. And so that is going to stick with me forever. And I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. That was so cool. And he deserves the world. And he is what Florida State embodies to me in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a resilience and, you know, an unconquered spirit, I think, about Florida State in general, that doesn't really matter what you throw at us. We find a way to persevere.
No, that's what's up, 100%. So I'm going to put you on the spot here real quick. So with all of your years covering Florida State, do you happen to have a favorite team throughout all those years?
From a single sport or like all sports combined?
Oh, excuse me, for basketball, like favorite basketball team throughout all the years, sorry.
VZ knows what the answer is to this one. The team that didn't get a chance to compete for a Final Four. Nick, they'd have made the Final Four, and I'm sticking to it. I mean,
I sure, agree.
I feel like they were a Final Four team, and I mean, once you get there, anybody's ballgame, right? Like, once you get to that Final Four, might as well. At that point, you're two games away from hoisting the trophy. So that group was as dominant by the end of a basketball team as I had seen. And they had everything. They had two of everything. Bigs, guards, length, shooters, veteran leadership. They were battle-tested. They were hungry. They played with an edge. They had, you know, youngsters that were starting to emerge late in the year. And you're like, good luck. Whoever wants this group can come and get it. And literally the only thing that could have stopped them from reaching the Final Four was an act of God.
Literally.
What is the phrase that's coined in every contract? I forget what it's called. It's like force majeure or something like that. Basically, in contract talk, it basically means act of nature or act of God is the only thing that can void this contract. And so for Florida State, it was the only thing that was stopping them from making a Final Four that year, in my opinion, was COVID. That was the only thing that could have happened. And we'll never forgive COVID for doing that to us. And, you know, that's what made this season and last season so tough was, you know, we were not that far removed from being that program. So, yeah, that team was my favorite. If that's the season that we got with them, I enjoyed every second of that Louisville game when they came back and, yeah, you know, they were down double digits, and that Tucker Center, it roared in a way that few college basketball arenas have the ability to get to. And even Jay Billis, we were leaving the arena that day, and Jay, myself, and my buddy Matt Minnick, who also covers some basketball, we were walking out, and Jay said, "That's as good of an environment as I've ever been in my life." And then, you know, that to me, and it, he was probably right. I haven't been to the Fieldhouse, right? I haven't been to Allen Fieldhouse. I haven't been to Cameron. I wish I had been to Cameron to see, you know, that's on my bucket list.
Cameron's fun.
Yeah, it looks fun, but like,
yeah, it looks fun.
I don't have enough now to be able to make the comparison, right? Like, I haven't seen enough to be able to make that comparison, but I know what I felt that night, and there were chills when, you know, when Pat Williams stole a ball and dunked it, he sounded like an engine, like of a plane that had just been revved up. And then Trent postering Jordan Wara was, that's going to go down as one of the all-time Florida State plays in any sport, right? That's going to be in the highlight reel of any sport ever in Tallahassee.
Yeah, that dunk was insane. Now that I think about it, I haven't thought about that dunk in a long time, but yeah,
I think about it every day. It haunts me.
Okay. It's a screensaver on my phone, so I open it every morning. I go, "Hey, there you are."
It's just one of those what could have been, you know. Yeah. We fans talk about it a lot, especially over these last couple of years, and especially even this past weekend, seeing Kevin Keats make a Final Four. No disrespect to him, but Coach Hamilton had really three to four teams there right in a row that were Final Four good, and just some circumstances came up. And in 18-19, just two banged up between Trent Forrest, Phil Kofer, Terrence, Devin, David Nichols, just all those guys were banged up. Next year, COVID, 2021, with Scotty, just didn't feel like they ever had enough consistency, even though when they did, they were as good as any team in the country. And even 17-18, you know, when we, you know, they were two plays away from the Final Four against Michigan, really. So four teams right in a row that were definitely good enough. And then you see NC State go on this crazy run. It's like Hamilton had absolutely had deserved one at some point in that stretch. And it sucks that the best chance he got never came to fruition. But I honestly thought that Louisville game was going to be the game you said on the question I asked about favorite game or favorite moment. I thought you were going to say that. I'm sad I wasn't at that game, but even just on TV, trying to compare, I've been lucky enough to go to four games at Cameron Indoor for Florida State games. And Cameron's just such a unique environment. But the one that always sticks out to me was my first time there in 17-18. I called it the Phil Kofer legacy game because he had, what was it, 28, 29 points, and he was just killing them. Every single one of Duke's fans is like, "Oh my God, what is going on?" Because I mean, Florida State was whatever. I think we were 24th or 25th going into that game, and we come out just guns blazing, toe to toe. Then they go on this, I want to say it was a 10-0 run early in the second half, and it was deafening. I couldn't hear my own thoughts. I couldn't hear Coach Ham, who was sitting in the chair in front of me. It was deafening there. The talk can get loud, but I've never experienced anything like that.
Special, no doubt. Right.
I want to say probably my closest experience, and I've talked about this on the show as well, but it was actually my first time at the Tucker Center. This was 2019. This is when Duke came into town, and this is when Duke had Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett. Yeah, that day was crazy. And I remember when Zion got hurt too, and like everybody could hear that thud on the floor, like whenever he did get hurt. So I want to say that was the loudest. And then of course everybody knows the infamous Cam Reddish game winner that, you know, that a lot of people don't like to speak on. But
the only good college game he ever played. And he had 30 or whatever it was, 29, I think. But it's ridiculous.
I recall Coach K took two timeouts, I remember, to set that up. And they just got Florida State on a switch.
It wasn't even that. I've rewatched that play more times than I should have for my own mental health to see what went wrong. And I'm assuming Coach K or one of his assistants knew, because this was when, I want to say that was the first year or second year we started running deep, which is what they call their inbounds defense, that slanted 1-3-1 defense. And I don't know what they saw in their scouting report, but they were pretty certain that MJ Walker was going to sink down into the corner with that first shooter, whoever that was. And then they could have someone circle up top and they'd be wide open. And sure enough, they were right. It was a phenomenal play call and credit to them, but man, does that one hurt. I only saw 3 home losses in 3 years working with the team, and that was the last one.
Yeah.
For now, so you got anything else for?
Or you get to go? I'm good.
All right, I appreciate you for coming on, man. It was definitely a pleasure having you on, getting your insight on both the men and women team. And then, of course, you talking about your journey as far as broadcasting and doing play-by-play, man. So let the people know where you find you on social media.
Yeah, no doubt. On Twitter, Aria Masudi, and on Instagram, I think it's Aria_Masudi. So love connecting with people, and it's been a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you guys having me. It's cool. It's cool to be able to talk hoops and specifically hoops with two guys that love it as much as you guys do. So keep up the good work, and best of luck continuing the growth of this pod.
Thank you, man. Austin, let people know where to find you.
Twitter/X, EZVZNG, and on Instagram at EZ_VZ. Like I said, last episode, we're rolling back on SIs. We're switching operating systems and writing systems, so we're rolling there again. SI.com/FSU/basketball.
Yes, sir. Follow myself at @NickAndreATR on X/Twitter. Check me out on ChopChat.com. My recent article talking about Sarah Bajetti and the end of her college career is out right now, so make sure to check that out. But once again, thank you guys for listening in. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And I hope that you guys have a good day.